of The Shattering Mist, a program devoted to those of you who realize that all of the world's religious, political, military, and media institutions are corrupt, that they're counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. We're going to begin today, and our number, if you'd like to join us at any time during the next 2 hours, is toll-free. It's 877-300-7645. I'm Yada. We're going to begin today a little differently. Scott, our producer, hosts produces a show with a very liberal host later in the day. Borderline communist, which you mean akin to a Democrat, and not very different these days from Republicans. But this show had was trying to make a big deal of the Seattle school teachers' strike. That is a story that I have not covered because I am disgusted by the National Teachers Association and their big cry that they are in it for the children, that more money means a better education, that we should pass more taxes and more bonds to spend more money on our children's education, when all it means is spending more money on teachers who are underworked and who are underproductive.
And it's even worse than that. It's because they want the money, but they don't want how the children test or
what they learn
to be reflected into what they do.
They want no accountability, and yet they want money without accountability. That's what they want. They want money without having to work very hard for it, and no accountability. That's just great.
It's basically the show brought on somebody that's from a teacher organization.
Mm-hmm.
This organization lobbies through Congress, things like that. And they were talking about how they started talking about the Seattle strike. And when they, just like, this is how my mind works. I get a question in my head, and then I start to delve into it. My question to myself was, why, when teachers start talking about salary, do I absolutely not care? I actually get angry. I get upset. And and I wanted to figure out why. I wanted to see if there was actual facts out there that would back up what I...
Why Seattle school teachers are striking. And what did you find out?
Well, I found out that the reason I get mad is because the average household income in the United States is just over $50,000. The median wage, what they figure, is about just around $27,000 is what they figure.
Okay.
The average teacher salary in America is $47,000.
70% above the average wage.
Yeah.
And now for this grossly higher compensation, they're actually working fewer hours, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, that got me thinking. You know, well, what's going on in Seattle? And I found a Forbes article that said that. In Seattle, the average salaries and benefits equals around $90,000 a year. They also get 3 months vacation.
Wait a minute. So $90,000 when you add in benefits salaries, rather than being the 57 that you were talking about earlier.
The 47, yep.
The 47 you were talking about earlier. It's how much again?
It's $90,000 a year. So that 47 is only with just pure, you know, salary. You know, this is what you're guaranteed. You know, these are, you know.
This is a public job. Not a private sector job. This is a public job. And as a public job, their compensation and benefits is almost $100,000 a year. And now, to make $100,000 a year in business, you had really better perform. You're going to have to put in considerable time, and you are going to be evaluated strictly on performance. Your ability had better shine. You'd better be a major contributor. And yet, for their $100,000, they don't want to be evaluated at all, held accountable for anything.
Well, the Forbes article actually delved a little bit deeper. And the pay for Seattle city teachers was between $44K, the salary, and $86K. And this is just your salary. The average was about $50,000.
And again, and then the benefits take it close to $100,000.
And then the benefits add another, usually around another 30% after that. The average total salary brought in by the teachers was $67,000, and that was because they would coach one of the football teams or the basketball teams or coach one of the teams, maybe work a little bit longer hour, you know, stay after to do the detentions, things like that, or take on bigger classrooms. And then this is the part that actually got me, where I got upset.
What's the average work day of a teacher?
This is the part that got me upset, is that the average day where a teacher is actually teaching is only 6.1 hours.
Yeah, and this idea that, oh, but, you know, they're working on their lesson plans. No, they're not. Their lesson plans are provided for them. Oh, well, they're working on grading papers. No, they're not. They're grading papers when their students are doing assignments.
In some classrooms, they're grading them with the kids.
You know, there was a time where I worked for a salary, not very long, because most of my life I was either a commission salesman or I owned my own businesses. But one of the things that I learned about everybody that I would hire in my business and paid a salary to is there is no one, I mean absolutely no one, that was earning anything above an entry-level salary, and these are all 2, 3, and 4 times entry-level salaries, that was working an 8-hour day. I mean, that was just mythical. You know, typically in a business, I would show up between 6:30 and 6:45 would be my usual arrival time at the door. And then I would normally have... I never took a business lunch, but I would typically, if I was going to go out to lunch, it would be a 20-minute affair. And I would typically work until 7:30 at night. And so that's essentially a 13-hour day. And I would do that when I was back in the days I was working. I would do that 6.5 days a week. Now, I wouldn't do it today. I would limit it to 6 days a week. But that is what is customary in private practice. That's what's required if you're going to be effective at your job. Nobody in private practice works 8 hours a day. And these teachers are working 6.5 hours a day. And
not
by
even
the way,
no.
And by the way,
6.1 hours.
Oh, six.
Give them,
okay.
Don't add that extra time. On.
Six versus the average in business is 10. So they're working 40% fewer hours and averaging 50% more money. But beyond that, in business, your first year in most businesses, you're going to get first 2 or 3 years, you're going to get 2 weeks off a year. And over time, you're probably going to get to 4 weeks off a year. Some situations might give you 5 weeks off a year, including the holidays. But the teachers, they're getting 4.5 weeks off for each of the 3 months of summer vacation, plus all of the other school holidays. It's probably 16 weeks on average, 16 versus 2.
And then the other part of this.
It's just repulsive. I mean, it's just absolutely disgusting that we're paying teachers this much money.
Here's another problem that I really have with it, and this is another side of it that really gets, that ruffled my feathers, and this is why I don't care. Whenever I hear a teacher complain about money, I don't care. One, because obviously we can show you the stats that back it up,
right,
to where if you make more money, your kids are probably not doing as well. But here's the thing, is that not only are these teachers, because, you know, just a few months ago, 3 months ago, Chicago had a big strike.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers.
Yeah.
And there, I think, you know, they average insane amounts of money as well. The other thing that, and this is the part that really bothers me, is that these guys complain about money, yet they all have the money to contribute to whatever union they're part of.
Big time.
And then that union has the money to then go out and
buy politicians. Yeah, they own the Democratic Party.
If you have money to do all that, you're not hurting.
You know, the fact of the matter is, in America, in fact, in every country around the world, if you're going to work in the private sector or the public sector, you ought not be able to unionize. Because the unionization in the public sector causes the ability to own a political party and to gain gargantuan favor in terms of benefits that would not otherwise be applicable. So if you work in the post office or in the military or or a public teacher, you ought not be able to unionize. And this is the result of that. And in fact, any public sector job, if you work for the state or federal government, county government, no employee of a public sector entity ought to be able to unionize, because what has happened is that these jobs that are unbelievably anemic, I mean, jobs that are mostly thoughtless, boring as hell, no challenge whatsoever, where they're working few hours per day, getting too many days off per year, and they're now being overpaid to the tune of an average of twice to three times when you consider the total compensation package someone in the private sector that is grossly outworking them and grossly outproducing them. And so we are just a train wreck when it comes to public sector employment in this country. It's become a new form of welfare, and it's reprehensible. And it's particularly reprehensible with the National Education Association and the teachers' union. You know, if it were me, and I had the ability to clean up America, the first place I would go is education, and I would eliminate public education. I would privatize education. I would have a national voucher system so that parents could be accountable for their children. I would eliminate buses so that if you want to have children, you get your child to school, you get your child from school. Let's not squander money on buses, and let's make teachers compete for that child's education. There's a reason, many reasons, really, that America is falling apart. None greater than the fact that our education system has turned into an indoctrination system, and that our teachers and the academic institutions have completely failed America. And I mean that universally. It's primarily because of a combination of two factors. One is political correctness has removed the exercise of good judgment, the ability to be discerning and discriminating, and therefore to be moral, to be just, to have a functioning conscience from our educational system. So what you have is people awash in unfounded opinions which mirror that which is deemed to be politically correct, which is almost universally incorrect. And the second is that teachers don't teach. You know, they feel like they're entitled. It's kind of like everybody else in the country, that they ought to be paid, and they ought to be paid a lot, but you ought not be able to hold them accountable for what they're doing. So there's no accountability with the in an academic institution. And I can tell you that there was nothing more disappointing for me than the lack of education I got at the college level in business school. It was reprehensible. I mean, there was no education. And I could have learned and did learn more about business in a month of actually working in business than I did in 4 years of college. And I went to one of the top business schools in the country. It is extraordinarily sad. I was telling Scott during the break that I had an experience yesterday. It was a housekeeper showed up at my front door, unsolicited. You know, goody for her. She's trying to get more business. She showed up and pulled up my driveway right before my front door in a brand-new black Cadillac Escalade. her car was worth more than the two cars I had in my garage combined. And she handed me her card and said that she would like to clean our house. Sure. At this point, my wife and I are keeping our house clean. We don't have a housekeeper. Sure, I'd entertain it. How much do you charge? She said, well, I have to see the house. I said, why is that relevant? I mean, I'm going to be, you know, paying you for 3 or 4 hours a week. That's what would be typical for a house with two people in it, that this is a second home for us. But 2 to 3 hours or 3 to 4 hours a week is what it would, what we'd be willing to have someone here for. And so, my experience is that typically runs between $20 and $22 an hour is what a housekeeper typically gets, no matter where you are in the country. And she said, "No, I couldn't possibly do it for that." I said, "Well, what would you charge for 3 to 4 hours a week?" And she said, "Well, my absolute minimum is $140, but I wouldn't be here for 3 hours for $140. So you're telling me that you want $45 an hour? Oh, yeah, I have lots of clients that pay me over $250 per visit. So, I mean, you're talking about working 4 to 5 hours for them for $250, over $50 an hour as a housekeeper, and the customer is paying for all the supplies and all the equipment. It's just your labor. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I am willing to engage you to see if your work is of value to us for 4 hours each week at $25 an hour." She said, "No, I wouldn't even be interested." And she drove away in her black Escalade. And I looked at my wife and I who showed up shortly thereafter, and I said, "Here's her card. If I were you, I wouldn't contact her. But why is there any welfare in the state of Ohio? You know, we've gone into restaurants and stores. Every store, every restaurant that we go into has a help wanted poster somewhere in the store, somewhere outside the store. Now hiring. Why is there a single person on welfare? Why are the people loitering around liquor stores all around Cincinnati when people would be, I'd be delighted to pay someone for a non-skilled job, a housekeeper, for $25 an hour? You know, why is it that my in-law in Pennsylvania that owns the large apple orchard can't hire an American when the average wage is over $30 an hour, and he can't hire an American? There's not a single American that he has ever hired that even made it through one season, much less came back for a second season. Yeah, there's something seriously wrong with this company, country. People feel entitled, and yet they aren't accountable. The European Union is planning for member states, actually they're dictating to member states, that they'll be fined financially, that there'll be huge financial penalties if they don't acquiesce to Merkel's demand that they all accept a quota of Muslims. And so they're right now discussing the acceptance of 160,000, and they don't call them Muslims, they call them asylum seekers. And they're the first step to solving, this is solving. Can you imagine being so stupid as a journalist that you think that accepting 160,000 Muslims is a first step to solving the migrant crisis? This is from Germany's vice chancellor. You know, the fact that they have accepted hundreds of thousands is the reason that the crisis exists. I mean, there's two reasons this crisis exists. One is that the Obaminator was so stupid, he decided that he would go to war against the Syrian dictator Assad. Just as George Bush was so stupid, he thought that it would be a good thing to oust the Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. So he ousted the Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, and we've got 4 million refugees out of Iraq, 1 million people dead, 4 million refugees trying to get the hell out of Dodge. And then the Obaminator, not learning a thing from that, essentially declares war on Assad, and we've got, what now, five to six million refugees running out of Syria because we thought that an Islamic terrorist organization would do a better job of bringing freedom and democracy to Syria. For the same reason, there's 2 million trying to flee Libya because the Obaminator and John McClown thought that it would be a great idea to arm fundamentalist Muslims to take out Muammar Gaddafi, with that after four of these, even replacing the Taliban and getting some 4 million refugees from Afghanistan as a result of eliminating the dictator, that we haven't learned. We've had four in a row.
You play this game with me all the time. I have some questions for you.
Okay.
Is Saddam Hussein a good person?
No.
Or was he a good person?
Nope.
Is Assad a good person?
No.
Would Iraq be better off if Saddam Hussein was still in charge?
Oh, by every possible standard, from a terrorist standard to a human refugee standard to the life and freedoms of his people, by every measure, Iraq would be infinitely better off and was infinitely better off under Saddam Hussein than it is now under the Iranian mullahs.
Would it be better if Assad was still in charge?
You would have 8 million fewer refugees and at least 250,000 people alive that are now dead. And you would have tens of thousands of little girls that have been enslaved as sex toys still living in their homes, protected by their families.
So think about what you just said there.
Oh, thank you. Well, you didn't even mention Muammar Gaddafi. You didn't mention the Taliban.
Well, yeah. These are two guys that I know more about Assad and Hussein. You just said that people that...
Muammar Gaddafi, he was a syphilitic. I mean, this was a really weird dude.
We
dabbled in terrorism.
We know...
But look at Libya now.
But we know Gaddafi and Hussein and Assad are all they're bad people.
Yep. But not nearly as bad as those who have come to power in the vacuum that was left.
But that section of the world would be better off if those guys were still there.
That is correct.
Think about how horrible.
Not just a little bit. But we're talking about almost a million-fold increase in terrorism in Iraq once we ousted Saddam Hussein. We're talking about a functional country to the most war-torn, the most savage country on earth because of our animosity for Assad in Syria. We're talking about the only country now on earth that is governed by an infighting group of Islamic jihadists in Libya that became the arms merchant and the jihadist supplier for all manner of Islamic activities, including Boko Haram, throughout Africa and Libya. And we're not smart enough to figure it out. And how many disasters do we have to perpetrate before somebody in Washington says, you know, we ought to stop this because we're creating a real mess. Our actions are counterproductive.
Well, they can't. They won't. I mean, that's not that they can't. They won't.
Is it? Are we going right back to your initial topic, the indoctrination of Americans rather than their education? That Americans have become indoctrinated to the point that they're no longer capable of exercising good judgment, so that they're incapable of being rational. They're incapable of learning. They're incapable of recognizing when they're activities are counterproductive? Are we that stupid?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we are.
The vast majority of the world is.
I think we are.
Somewhere along the line, rather than being told a truth that hurt, It became, well, we don't want to hurt anybody. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Well,
when sometimes that hurt is what motivates you to change.
Yeah, we don't want to be hateful. And this notion that you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings and you don't want to be hateful is so counterproductive. What it says is that you are not going to hold a institution or doctrine accountable when it inspires the kind of hellish activity that we're witnessing in Libya, in Syria, in Yemen, in Egypt, in Turkey, in Afghanistan, in Syria, that you aren't going to speak out against the doctrines that motivate people to act that way. That's not caring. That's extraordinarily hateful. What you're doing is aiding and abetting rape and pedophilia and the slave trade and mass murder.
When you first began realizing that Catholicism is a bunch of sham. Did that truth kind of hurt you a little bit?
Made me angry.
Made you angry?
Yeah, made me angry.
That led you to do what?
To expose it and condemn it, and then to share with those who are open to the truth what was reliable and dependable, what wasn't a sham, so that those willing to leave the lie would know which direction to walk to find the truth.
Sometimes the truth is what's needed, and that hurt needs to be there because it pushes you to other things.
Right.
Getting angry
isn't something. Righteous indignation is a huge part of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms for a good reason. It's good to be righteously indignant, to be right, which means to hate that which is wrong. And that's what it means to be righteously indignant. That's Yahweh's style. And so if you want to be like God, and I'm not saying that we're capable of emulating him, but that to the greatest degree that we can model ourselves after the same approach that he takes, then we ought to hate more. We ought to hate those things which are counterproductive, which are destructive, which are deadly, which are damning, which are abusive to other people. And if we expose and condemn them aggressively, the world's a better place.
And do it the best way you can. Through truth.
Yeah.
Do it through truth.
Right. Evidence and reason. Use your words. There's no reason ever to lash out violently against a hateful and destructive and deadly doctrine. You play right into their hands when you do that. That's why America is making bad situations worse around the world. We're lashing out against them using bullets and bombs as opposed to words.
One of my favorite things that somebody ever said to me was, you only have to remember lies. You don't have to remember the truth because you know the truth.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Well, so here we are in Europe, and they are now struggling to deal with this next group of 160,000 asylum seeker migrants. And I would tell you this, Scott, the number isn't 160,000. It isn't the million that have been taken into the United States and the million that have been taken into Europe in the past couple of years. No, that's not the number. Matter of fact, it's important for us to know the number. The number from Syria alone is 6 to 8 million. The number from Afghanistan, which is number two, is 4 million. The number from Iraq is 4 million. You know, those countries all have a couple of things in common, and that's also including the next country, which is Libya, which is 3 million. So 3 million, 4 million, 4 million, and 6 to 8 million, Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. The two things that they have in common, A, they are all Islamic, and that in each of those countries there is a religious civil war. And number two, America bombed all of them. You know how many refugees there were in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya before America bombed them? Zero. And now you have 17 million. 17 million is an increase from zero. Now, wouldn't you think that there would be someone in Washington, someone in the media, someone in academia that might be able to make the connection? All right, here, America engaged and invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, bombed Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya, supplied weapons on both sides in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. And as a result of doing that, we have total chaos in those countries, and we have 17 million refugees. That those are the four countries that we bombed. And we invaded, and we exercised our military power, and those are the four greatest producers of refugees in the world today. There's only two other countries that are producing refugees, Turkey and Lebanon. And they're directly attributable to what we did in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. And it takes the total to 20 million. Why isn't there somebody in Washington accepting responsibility and saying, you know, maybe we ought to stop this? This is madness. This is suicidal. This is stupid. Russian President Vladimir Putin has pledged continued military support for Syria's Bashar al-Assad, despite growing concerns over Moscow's role in the war. Putin urged other countries to join Russia in sending military and technical assistance. He said that the flow of refugees to Europe would have been even bigger without Russian support for Syria's government. He's right. He's right. Assad is a scumbag. He's as bad as his father, who was a mass murderer. But they are nothing compared to those who would take power from them if he were to fall.
I think Putin also had the statement of the only way to stabilize Syria is to keep Assad in power.
You know, if America hadn't sought to remove Assad from power and then armed the Sunni Muslims through Qatar and Saudi Arabia to take him out of power, you would not have the migrant crisis that Europe is now dealing with. That's it. We caused it because we were stupid. He said that the White House, of course, it says that Russia's support for President Assad was counterproductive. God damn. American politics. I mean, I'm sorry, but we are just disgusting. Actually, what Russia is doing is productive. What America is doing is counterproductive. It's America that screwed up Afghanistan. It's America that screwed up Iraq. It's America that screwed up Yemen. It's America that screwed up Libya. And it's America that screwed up Syria. What we are doing has consistently been counterproductive, and we go off and blame the people who took the opposite approach. God, we are so lost. The America in the minds of the patriot and the real America bear absolutely nothing in common. This continues to read, the U.S. would prefer to see more constructive engagement from Russia with the coalition against the so-called Islamic State, said spokesman Josh Earnest. Yeah, that's working out real well for us, isn't it? It says that Moscow has been a key ally of Mr. Assad throughout the bloody civil war, which began in 2011. This civil war, folks, isn't between Assad and as if he were a lone dictator and his government and the Islamic State. The Islamic State has spent far less energy attacking Assad than they have Shia Muslims. And their primary purpose is to protect Sunni Muslims. It's the Nusra Front that was initially effective at and continues to be effective at attacking Assad. I mean, the American diplomat, the White House spokesperson, hasn't got a clue as to what's happening there. The war in Syria isn't about Assad. It's about Sunni via Shia Islam. A fight that America exacerbated with its invasion of Iraq. It says that military equipment is being sent to Syria to help the government combat the Islamic State, which is what Russia is claiming. President Putin said on Thursday, yesterday, we support the government of Syria in countering the terrorist aggression. You'd think that every sane country on earth would, but there would be no reason to provide military hardware to Assad if America wasn't providing military hardware to those opposing him. We provide and will continue to provide it with the necessary military and technical assistance, and we urge other countries to join us, said a voice of sanity in the midst of ignorance. Now, this is interesting. In January, the U.S. Central Command announced that U.S. and coalition airstrikes against the Islamic State targets in Iraq and Syria destroyed 184 Humvees. Who made the Humvees? America. We bombed our own Humvees. Boy, talk about a boondoggle. We spend fortunes building and flying aircrafts and fortunes on smart bombs to destroy our own equipment and nearly 700 other military vehicles, all of which we made.